When we launched the UN Principles for Responsible Banking in the UK, it was led by Triodos. We did it in the Houses of Parliament. We had ministers there, members of the House of Lords. And I was the only bank CEO in the room because all the big banks sent people from their communications teams.
Yeah, yeah.
It was all about thinking, how do we position ourselves towards this? And lots of them were keen to sign up and have the badge and have the PR about this initiative. Same with Net Zero Banking Alliance. Then what really happens and does that translate is a big question.
Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we discuss current developments and the role of money in creating a more balanced and just world. Of course, we want you to be part of this conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes to share your thoughts or ask questions. Let's get started. Hi there, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Money for Change. My name is Emma DeLeo, and I'm your host for today. In this episode, we dig into the limits of voluntary pledges in the financial sector and ask what it really takes to shift money away from fossil fuels and toward a sustainable future. Our guest today is Bevis Watts. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Bevis has spent nearly a decade as CEO of Triodos Bank UK and has been at the front lines of sustainable finance and will tell us what's working, what's not, and why it's time to stop relying on good intentions. And of course, we have our regular guest, Hans Stegeman, Chief Economist of Triodos Bank.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You will tell us also your ideas on the financial system and how we can shape that to benefit our planet and people. But of course, before that, we have to take a look at the news. What has been going on in the world recently, Hans?
Yeah, Emma, the first news is actually from you, right?
I did, yes. I will share it. Listeners probably have listened. There was a massive landslide in the Swiss village of Blatten, and pretty much half of the village was just buried. BBC has some really interesting pictures, which I always like to look at sometimes.
You always like to look at disasters, Emma.
I think just the sheer force of what you see in these photos, it's literally a whole mountain coming down and just burying this whole village. Luckily, there were no deaths. So the Swiss government, and this is why I have it in the news, because the Swiss government was able to act quickly and be very precautious and evacuate the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
So this shows, you know, climate change is affecting towns, and some governments take better action to protect their citizens.
Is it actually clear that it is from climate change?
Yeah, so I did take a look and I read a bit more. It's mainly due to the permafrost because of the higher temperatures year over year. So it's not just one climate event happening, but it's the, you know, the planet getting warmer, there's more melting, and that has kind of shifted the mountain, which then crashed through this glacier to bury this town. Then I also have another, for me, it's the negative news this week. That usually doesn't happen. But in India, there's the monsoon season happening right now. And it's a typical story probably years ago. The same things happening. Inadequate infrastructure resulting in a lot of flooding. And this is an example, I thought, of governments not acting well enough to protect their populations and societies from climate events.
Yeah, I think that there was also news also from the World Meteorological Organization on a lot of new climate and weather extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this fits perfectly. This was also last week, I think, somewhere in the news.
Yeah, in the last edition, the Glacier Preservation Day was on June, 4th or something. So I thought that was also a nice way of coinciding with this glacier actually smashing through.
Yeah. So this was the optimistic part?
Yeah. Now it's your turn. What
now
do you
it's
have
my
for
turn,
us?
Yes. Well, there's always a lot to do about population. So people think, well, overpopulation, this is the biggest problem for sustainability. So it's not about that we should consume less. We just simply need to have less people. People say, huh? So that's not what I say. And then there was a study in Nature Communications last week finding out that all the population counting of how many people are there in the world at this moment is wrong. And that probably we miss maybe a billion people at the moment, mostly in rural areas. So we are with more people than we have expected. So that's not in the Western rich world, but mostly in rural Africa.
Okay.
And this is a challenge. Because, well, you can look at it from different perspectives. You can on the one hand say, okay, we have many more people that eat and that have livelihoods. So maybe it is better than we think. That could be the case. Or we could say, oh, but so we have even more people. So overpopulation is even a bigger problem. I don't know, but it has also real world consequences, because in how we want to help people, so in plans for health programs, disaster risk and basic services, we miss those people. So the policies are also wrong. It also relates to your point in about India in terms of governance. If you don't know how many people there are in a crisis or in an emergency, how many people
So an example, or famines because of a lot of droughts. We say, you know, I think it was in Somalia or Ethiopia that 400,000 people died. Potentially that number is a lot larger.
Yeah, and we simply don't know. And why is this interesting? And we're not going, maybe that's another episode that we can do about, is overpopulation the problem or is it affluence?
Yeah,
I think that's still an interesting one and still comes up in every lecture I give, that people say, yeah, it's not about overconsumption now, we simply have too many people. I think it's differently.
Yeah.
But if we have even more people, it's still important to discuss it.
Yeah, especially as you get countries that are becoming more developed. And there is a documentary on China and the food supply and how that's all provided. And, you know, as that continues to grow, the strain, I think, on planet will probably increase. All right. Do we have a positive news item for this week?
Maybe this is possible. We are with more people. Yeah. This can be positive. No, the last news is, and it comes closer to our topic of today. Yeah. And I think it's not positive. Texas has removed BlackRock from its official investment blacklist. So BlackRock was not allowed to invest in Texas. And the move follows.
And why was that originally?
Because they had supported or subscribed to key climate commitments like the Climate Action 100.
Okay, interesting. And
so they were pledging to do a lot on climate.
Yeah.
And this is bad, as you know.
And Texas was not interested.
Yeah. So this opens for BlackRock is positive news, because it opens for BlackRock, the Texas state funds. So $300 billion they can manage and earn a lot of money as asset manager. And I think this is an example of what we currently see. So a lot of regulation and a lot of voluntary pledges of the financial sector, especially since COP26, I think that is a milestone, and Bevis, you have been there. And we see a retreat of a lot of it.
Mm.
And this is what we see today in the newspaper.
Yeah.
I see Bevis sighing.
Yeah, well, I think we'll come to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Not just COP26, but a 10, 20-year view of different initiatives we've seen and lack of progress.
Great. I think that's a perfect segue into our key question. Bevis, awesome that you're here today. As I said before, you've spent nearly a decade leading Triodos Bank UK. During that time, you pushed boundaries, whether it was backing the UK's first rewilding loan or shaping financial policy at events like COP26 in Glasgow. You've decided now is a good time to step away and hand over the bank. But before you head out, we wanted to sit down with you and get kind of a big picture conversation, specifically on the role of regulation in sustainable finance. You've had a front row seat to see how the financial system has evolved. And hopefully you can help us answer the key question today, which is, will banks only go green when governments force their hand? Before we dig into the key question, let's sketch the context. Over the past 10 years, what has happened in sustainable finance? What are some of the key trends? What's changed and where are we still stuck?
Well, I think Hans earlier articulated that the trend has been for everybody to jump on a bandwagon, you know, be wanting to be seen to be doing the right thing, and then lots of withdrawal and so on from commitments and real action and so on.
How was it? Because you were in Glasgow at the time, and so with the GFANZ, the Glasgow, what was the
Glasgow for Net Zero Alliance that then became Net Zero Banking Alliance.
A lot of big banks, also in the UK, were also all very happy and doing a lot of pledging to do a lot. Mm-hmm. But how was that for you then?
Well, I mean, if you go back before 2021 and COP26, so Paris Climate Agreement, big commitments made then, no teeth to them. 2018, the UN Principles for Responsible Banking were launched. Lots of people signed up to those. Quite basic principles like consult your customers on what you're lending to and get their approval and be transparent in publishing how much you lend to certain sectors. I would think the vast majority of banks that signed up to those, I mean, the ones I know have not delivered on any of those. PCAF was even earlier, the Partnership for Carbon Accounting Financials, which has seen good adoption, but hasn't become kind of, no regulator has mandated it or said this is going to be the international best practice framework. So even before COP, there's lots of stuff that people were signing up to. Yep. And then you look back on these voluntary agreements and think, what's really happened? Mm-hmm. And by the way, have they delivered on them? And just as an anecdote, we were talking earlier off air just about sustainability sitting in the marketing department. Mm-hmm. When we launched the UN Principles for Responsible Banking in the UK, it was led by Triodos. We did it in the Houses of Parliament. We had ministers there, members of the House of Lords. And I was the only bank CEO in the room because all the big banks sent people from their communications teams.
Yeah, yeah.
It was all about thinking, how do we position ourselves towards this? And lots of them were keen to sign up and have the badge and have the PR about this initiative. Same with Net Zero Banking Alliance. You know, then what really happens and does that translate is a big question. And I think the reality is these voluntary agreements aren't enough because unless you have regulation, the reality is that change clashes too much with the financial models of banks.
Do you think, I sometimes have the feeling that a lot of banks did not know where they signed up to. That they just said, everybody's doing it, let's say net zero, and we'll see.
You'll know I agree with that, because I mean, I had the great privilege of launching Triodos Group's net zero target at COP26. And obviously, we set a very ambitious target. The rules of how you set those targets has changed, or how you achieve them has changed since then. But you know, we said we'd be net zero by 2035 at the latest, really ambitious. But we were doing so as a bank that never financed fossil fuels, not aviation, automotive. We didn't have any of the high-polluting sectors. Already had a good baseline understanding of our emissions using PCAF for several years. And we were saying, well, if the earliest we think we can get there is then you guys are in a very different starting place. How do you think 2050 is feasible? And of course, we've seen net zero targets like HSBC's going back decades. And then you just... Exactly to your point. I mean, what was the credibility in the first place? Okay. And, you know, we shouldn't be all totally downbeat. Some banks have made progress and set targets against reducing fossil fuel exposure. Yep. But if you look at the sector as a whole, the level of change and so on is you know, it's totally inadequate.
And was there a key moment in the past 10 years where that shifts? Because it sounds like for a long time, you know, we set up voluntary standards, we set up ways to measure these goals that we want to achieve. At what point was there a retreat? Was there any key event or...
Well, I mean, the retreat's quite recent with the collapse of the Net Zero Banking Alliance. I mean, I hope you'll recognise this, Hans. When Triodos kind of entered that, we were always cautious.
Yeah.
We've always advocated that actually it would be better to set high standards and celebrate those achieving the high standards than have initiatives that have lowest common denominators that everybody can sign up to but demonstrate very little change. So, I think this is a moment where, you know, the UN Sustainable Finance Initiative and all these things should just maybe rethink. Mm-hmm. How do you create a club that really celebrates best practice and drives the market to them rather than, you know, it's important we engage all the mainstream banks, but what only focus on that lowest common denominator. Denominators not getting us anywhere.
So. Yeah, and I think that's what we have experienced at least the last 5 years. So also like you've been doing in the UK, being part of it and trying to push the rest a little. So not being only critical about everything everywhere, but also being very honest on about what we can do. And if it's watering down, like we have seen over the last few weeks or months for the Net Zero Banking Alliance, so US banks going out, the rest becoming less ambitious than for us after being a few years in there. And especially our UK colleagues very active in engaging with the other banks. Then in the end, our decision was, what are we doing here? And that's a disappointment also for us. Because we want to move, so it's not only about us as Triodos Bank and we can reach our targets. That's to be honest, that's maybe not so important.
Yeah.
It's much more important if the rest of the financial sector moves towards a more sustainable stance. I think we can also say that we failed also a little. We have not convinced the rest of the financial sector that you could do more.
Yeah.
It's not only up to us, but at least it's not a success.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Going back to the key question, because I think now we have a very good perspective from the financial industry. What about the role of governments? Because, you know, these were all voluntary. I think it's been clear that the voluntary standards have worked for a very small group of financial institutions, but for the general mainstream hasn't really gotten that push. Yeah, how does the role of government play in these, the regulations, the EU sustainable finance regulations? Has that motivated more change? I know that within the EU, they're now looking at reviewing all of the regulations that they did implement, but in the short time that they were there, were they more effective than the voluntary standards, would you say?
Well, the role of government sets the role of regulators. Yeah. And certainly in the UK around COP26, there was very positive changes to change the role of actually the Treasury Department and the Bank of England and things to actually have responsibility for climate change and so on. The question is then whether if it's in the mandate, whether the approach is right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things for me that are really core principles at that. Whether you're trying to sort of continue a paradigm where the banking industry kind of doesn't feel that it has to steer the economy, it just follows the economy. So it takes no moral responsibility for any direction. It's just following it and making money out of trends. Or whether you use regulation to steer the economy towards the sustainable future we want. And that's what I think, you know, we I'm sure would all advocate for. So I mean, you'll be better placed at an EU level to.
Yeah, but it's also very fundamental how you see the role of finance in a transition. And I think most mainstream banks take the position, we are here to finance economic activity and we do that based on risk return considerations.
Yeah.
And everything that's not forbidden, which is legal, we can finance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even go a little bit further and say, if we don't finance it, we have a problem. While the Triodos Bank position is always has been different and say, so we also have a kind of a moral idea that we want to finance what is good for society or what helps the transition or that kind of lingo that we always use. And we have an idea on what we want. And then you can say, okay, then you can move towards sustainability. And then comes regulation in. So if you take the position, yeah, we finance just whatever happens, then it's clear that any voluntary commitment does not work.
No.
Yeah.
It's not how you see what you're doing.
So that's one factor. The other factor then, as I referenced, is the approach. And the approach, when given the mandate to think about climate change and so on, has all been a risk management one. It's all about risk. So,
okay. Can you explain the outside in, inside out kind of distinction for the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose essentially what has come into effect is the obligation on banks to understand climate risks, how they will affect their portfolios in terms of physical risk through flooding and fires and everything else, and transition risk from industries that may not be financially sustainable as public policy or, you know, climate impacts take effect. So the rationale was internalize the risks within banks. When they own those risks, they'll make different decisions.
Yeah.
For me, that's just fundamentally flawed because banks can pivot and shift portfolios off balance sheet, sell elements of them, and it just doesn't go far enough. It doesn't move us to that paradigm where we're steering economies versus following them.
And it takes no responsibility of the financial institution, the negative impact they inflict through their financing.
No, not at all. In a way, it's just it's so bizarre because we're trying to protect a financial system from the problem it plays a major role in creating.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, I think if most people understood that, they'd think, hang on, this isn't right.
Yeah, maybe to try to bring a little bit positivity on regulation. I think what has happened, it's still not enough.
But no.
What we've seen, at least in Europe, with regulation, which is still, well, we'll see what happens with it. But what has happened is that sustainability considerations are from the marketing department and the communications department for mainstream banks going to the risk department, to compliance, and also to the board from a risk perspective, which is definitely not good enough. But at least it takes a place somewhere.
But if you take a recent example of that in all the greenwashing regulation that's come into effect, so it is now evident that because of fines on international banks for greenwashing, you have discussions around, well, what's the risk of being caught out on greenwashing? That's going all the way up to board level. But again, what the greenwashing regulations do is put the highest burden of proof on banks like Triodos to show that we're doing really, truly sustainable things. It doesn't do anything to change the behaviours of the banks that they might not greenwash anymore, but does it fundamentally change their underlying portfolios?
Completely agree, but I was trying to find something positive. Yeah. And then at least you could say that completely agree. So the success of lobbying, especially in Europe, has been... So my reading of the last 10 years on sustainability regulation in Europe is, at some point of time, the vested interest thought, we cannot prevent that we have regulation on sustainability for the financial sector. So let's make it as complicated as possible. And let's put the burden on the sustainability side.
Yeah.
And that's a huge success for that lobby.
Yeah.
And now in the second round, it becomes even bigger because now you can say, it's so complex.
Yeah.
So let's kill all of it.
Yeah.
And that's where we are now. But still, on a positive note, I try to. You could say that at least banks should do more about sustainability, should be aware also from a regulatory perspective, should report more. Which, in a theory of change, might in the end lead to incorporating it in strategy and then also to the positive side.
Mm.
So,
but I'm stretching myself to be positive.
So essentially what Hans is saying for the listeners tuning in, sustainability statements are pretty much required for the labeled sustainable products, but not across all products. So even as a retail investor, you have access to sustainability information for the already sustainable products, but the regular investment products, you don't have any insight in, is essentially what the idea is, and also, that should become more required.
Yeah, that's for the investment products, but also for the bank, you have to say.
It would be similar to what we've seen in other industries, putting health warnings on cigarettes.
Yeah, that's a good
put
one.
Health warnings on your financial products to know this is actually not good for your future. It's not a complex.
So you destroy the environment or something, but you earn a nice return. Yeah. That's kind of what we should have there.
Yeah, I think we've really already answered the question by focusing so much on how government regulation and essentially mandatory regulation is really the only thing that's going to change the behavior.
One point on it. So we talked about regulating the green side, but it's about the brown side. So you should, because still a lot of banks claim that they do a lot on the energy transition.
Yeah.
And probably they do because they can earn money with some parts of it, but they still finance fossil.
Yeah.
And that's the part that you should regulate to accelerate the transition.
Yeah.
It's multiple things. It's a real mind shift from what we're doing in shift the banking sector to steer an economy aligned with what elected governments are trying to do by way of a transition. That needs a different approach that isn't just about risk management and protecting the financial sector from itself. It's really about using existing regulation in a different way to steer what they do with their customers' money, because ultimately it should be a democratic force, you know.
Yeah. Are there any examples of voluntary initiatives that have been successful?
Who are you looking at?
I'm looking at both of you from your very experience. Maybe not even on sustainability, but is there any, even in the general financial sector, any voluntary commitments that have been successful?
I think on a really big scale, it's very hard to point to any
success. On a systems change scale, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's quite hard to... I can't think of one.
Yeah.
But then I'm not expert in all voluntary agreements across the banking sector by any means.
I think we have seen a few which have been... the Science-Based Targets Initiative, it's not a success anymore, but it has been for some time. So it's
and the science-based targets is banks want to go to being net zero, they get it reviewed by this organization.
But the other example, I mean, we touched on Partnership for Carbon Accounting Financials earlier. I mean, it's voluntary that you use that and you participate in that. But the scale that now encompasses, you know, globally, financial institutions, assets and management is fantastic. To the extent, I then question, but why don't we regulate for it? Why isn't there an international agreement that that's the standard?
And so essentially there, it is a success of a voluntary methodology that has been implemented globally, but has it led to actual change in action? That's where you say, you know, that's where the successful part is still to be determined.
It has led to, I think, more robust understanding of emissions in the participating institutions, which means, to Hans's earlier point, better setting of future targets and more meaningful commitments. And the reason I'm calling for that to be mandatory or adopted as a global, you know, standard is because you still have people then setting targets and baselines outside of that methodology with no transparency on how that's done, that isn't 1.5 degree aligned. And therefore, it's like you're still comparing apples and pears.
Yeah.
So it undermines everything we've talked about earlier in product standards and disclosures and everything else. So,
I was thinking, maybe sometimes you can say also the role of Triodos Bank and our Global Alliance on Banking or Values, you can say this is all small. You can also say, looking from a different perspective, more a transition perspective, with what we do and the products that we make and the choices that we make, we probably inspire part of the financial sector.
Yes.
Maybe not all of them, but of course you see the products that we have developed over the years, you see them replicated by others, also the kind of ethical investment choices that we made, we see them back where others, the markets have grown quite a lot on impact investing, on sustainable banking. So you could also say from a different perspective, yes, this helps.
Uh-huh.
So not only voluntary agreements and commitments, but also doing banking in a different way that moves the industry.
Yeah.
But what you never can say, the exact causal relationship between voluntary activities or different styles of banking and what's happening in the sector, and even not what's happening in regulation, because we also know, and that's what we do behind closed doors, is having talks with regulators and others to just, and or with members of parliament in Europe and in other countries, to just explain how banking works and what the challenges are.
Yeah.
And I think this is the part of what we try to do to influence also the financial sector. And this is never that you see any causal relationship and you can say it's success or not. But I think this is what we as Triodos Bank are trying to do as small as we are.
Mm.
So to wrap up the key question, will banks become more green, more sustainable, voluntarily, or only when governments force the hand? I'm going to try and wrap up what you guys have said. So I think voluntary pledges definitely set a direction. They're important to also explore how to go about dealing with these different sustainability issues and topics, how you measure it, how you make decisions. But that governments do have a very important role to play in requiring that systems change.
Yeah, a very positive summary of what we've said.
Any last additions?
Well, I don't think what we're talking about is fundamental change to the regulatory system. There are things within the regulatory system that could be used. So what you lend to and how much you lend to different sectors derives how much capital you have to hold as a bank, which then affects your profitability. And we've seen it before, just I think in early 2019, the ECB reduced Europe-wide the amount of capital you have to hold against renewable energy projects, instantly made them more profitable. Yep. So you could incentivize lending to certain sectors or disincentivize it using capital weightings. And the Climate Safe Lending Network has called for that and everything else. So I just think it's worth being clear, we're not necessarily, because, you know, people think, oh, my God, you're looking to change the entire regulatory system. Yeah. We're looking to use it in a different way and shift flows of capital such that we're steering the economy, as I said earlier, not just following it. And we're not just taking a risk-based approach to protect the financial industry from its own effects. It's really fundamentally
using it to
changing its role in society. Yeah. And I think that's firstly to keep people's money safe and secondly is to use it in their long-term interests.
Well said. This brings us to our closing question, which we always ask each guest. If you had 10 billion euros or pounds to change the world...
I would take pounds, it's a little bit more.
Let's go for pounds. if you had 10 billion pounds to change the world, how would you use it?
Well, 10 billion isn't very much.
Ooh.
Everybody so in finance says that is not so much, and all the guests think it's a lot of money.
Exactly. So when you've run a bank, you realize actually 10 billion in the scheme of things, the world doesn't go very far. But I don't know, because of what we have discussed today, I've often thought, you know, if I had loads of money, I'd probably be an activist investor in other banks, or I'd put money into products that I see a greenwash and then take legal action against them and probably get very wealthy in pursuing them for compensation for mis-selling me certain products. So that's how my activist brain works. I'd use it in quite radical ways.
I think that might be a good idea.
I like that answer, yeah. All right. Thanks again, Bevis, for joining us and sharing your insights. And thank you, Hans, as well, for providing great inputs. This was another episode of Money for Change. Stay with us for the conversation on how finance can shape a better world.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.